Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. I am your reader, Ike Rayford, and our weather today is mostly sunny, 44 for a high and a low of 19. Our mini editorial comes from Mark Lennon of Sioux City. He says, well, the music sings at Morningside Water Tower. I just hope that they have a better design and certainly a better tune to play at the new Grandview Water Tower. Please, no Sioux City Sioux. So sad to see them tear down those beautiful evergreen trees that have been part of the park for over 50 years. Sad. Again, that is from Mark Lennon of Sioux City. A couple of front page stories of local interest. Jobless rate falls in Metro by Dave Dreesen of the Sioux City Journal. Unemployment in Metro Sioux City ticked down to 4.1% in February as employers added 100 non-farm jobs, according to state data released on Tuesday. The jobless rate in Sioux City, MSA, defined as Woodbury and Plymouth counties in Iowa, Dakota and Dixon counties in Nebraska, and Union County in South Dakota, fell slightly from 4.3% in January, according to Iowa Workforce. The state and national rates are seasonally adjusted, while local rates are not. Of the state's largest cities, only Ames, 3%, Iowa City, 3.8%, had lower rates than Sioux City's. Rates for other large metros include Cedar Rapids, 5.2%, Dubuque, 5.1%, Des Moines, 4.6%, and Waterloo, 4.5%. A total of 82,600 people were employed in non-farm occupations in Metro Sioux City in February, up 100 from the previous month, according to Iowa Workforce. The largest gains came in government, 300, leisure and hospitality, and professional and business services, manufacturing, 100 each. The biggest losses were in trade, transportation, and warehousing, which parred 800 jobs. Retail accounted for 100 of the losses in the sector. Overall, metro area employment remains down 800 non-farm jobs from a year ago, and on the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. In February 2020, the metro unemployment rate stood at a historically low 3.2%. Professional and businesses services is the only sector that has posted a gain since then, adding 500 jobs. The hardest hit has been leisure and hospitality, which lost over 1,000 positions in the face of reduced travel, tourism, and restrictions on in-person dining due to the virus. In April, as COVID-19 sank its claws into Iowa and unprecedented lockdowns were implemented nationwide, Metro Sioux City lost around 7,700 jobs as the unemployment rate soared from 3.6% in March to 9.3% in April, a local level not seen in the state records dating back to 1990. The local rate slowly rebounded in the following months. Elsewhere in northwest Iowa, the ranks of the unemployed also continued to steadily fall in February. Neighboring Lyon and Sioux counties tied for the lowest unemployment among the state's 99 counties, with both posting microscopic rates of 2.6% and 2.7%, respectfully, according to Iowa Workforce. Eight other area counties, Buena Vista, Cherokee, Clay, Ida, O'Brien, Osceola, Plymouth, and Sac, all had rates of 4% or below. Crawford County had the area's highest jobless rates of 6% for February. Also, front page of the journal, a story from Mason Doctor, Siouxland District Health taking 4,200 vaccine appointments. And this is in Sioux City. Again, anyone over age 16 in Woodbury County was allowed to start making appointments for COVID-19 shots Tuesday, a week before Governor Kim Reynolds officially makes all adult Iowans eligible for coronavirus vaccinations. Siouxland District Health began taking online reservations at 3 p.m. Tuesday for clinics scheduled April 6 and 8 at the Siouxland Expo Center. Appointments were required and confirmed on a first-come, first-served basis. District Health officials said about 4,200 doses of vaccine are available for the two clinics, because that's not nearly enough to cover the tens of thousands of county residents who are not eligible. Officials said it will take weeks to get the vaccine into the arms of everyone in the county who wants it. The district health website offered appointments for the three approved vaccine brands, Pfizer for ages 16 and older, and Moderna or Johnson & Johnson for ages 18 and over. As of 5 p.m. on Tuesday, appointments were still available for both clinics. The Iowa Department of Health website lists a total of 10 vaccination sites in Woodbury County, including Siouxland Community Health and 8 pharmacies. The latter includes Drilling Pharmacy, Thomas Dean Drug, CVC Pharmacy, and the 4 Hy-Vee locations in Sioux City and Sergeant Bluff Pharmacy. As of Tuesday, 15,033 people in Woodbury County have completed a 2-dose vaccine series, and another 1,618 have received the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, meaning about 16.1% of the county is fully vaccinated. This is behind Iowa's statewide vaccination rate of about 18.7% fully vaccinated, and behind several neighboring counties. Still, Woodbury County figures are on par with the U.S. overall. Another 9,775 people in Woodbury County have received one dose of a 2-dose series and are awaiting a second shot, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health data. Reynolds has said she anticipates opening up vaccine availability to all Iowa adults on April 5th as national supplies and the allocation of doses to states increases. As of Monday, Iowa was the 8th in the nation for the percentage of the entire state population fully vaccinated at 19%, or 598,935 people out of a total state population of about 3.1 million. Nationally, 15.8% of the U.S. population is vaccinated, or about 52.6 million people. The Associated Press contributed to this story. And the numbers, Siouxland COVID-19 cases by county, these are positive cases. And due to the change in reporting by the state, the Iowa numbers are total positive test. Prior to February 19th, the Iowa numbers were total individuals who tested positive for the virus. Yankton, 2,917 cases, 28 deaths. Clay, 1,869, 15 deaths. And Union, 2,129, 41 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County, 925 cases, 14 deaths. Dixon, 677, 13 deaths. Wayne, 1,102 with 6 deaths. Thurston, 1,150 with 16 deaths. And Dakota County, 3,998 with 67 deaths. On the Iowa side of Siouxland cases, Lyon County, 1,509 with 41 deaths. Osceola, 741 with 16 deaths. Dickinson County, 2,418 with 41 deaths. Clay County, 2,115 with 25 deaths. O'Brien, 2,065, 54 deaths. Sioux County, 5,118, 69 deaths. Plymouth County, 4,128 with 79 deaths. Cherokee, 1,641 with 37 deaths. Buena Vista, 4,818 with 39 deaths. Sac County, 1,309 with 18 deaths. Ida County, 985 with 32 deaths. Monona County, 844 with 30 deaths. Crawford County, 2,825 with 36 deaths. And Woodbury County, 15,754 with 217 deaths. This data is as of 3 p.m. on Tuesday from the state local health departments. And the overall number for South Dakota, 117,495 cases. Nebraska, 208,912 cases. And in Iowa, 378,817 cases. And again, this data is as of 3 p.m. on Tuesday. And one more note, due to the change in reporting by the state, the Iowa numbers are total positive test. Prior to February 19th, the Iowa numbers were total individuals who tested positive for the virus. And again, this comes from the state public health departments. One last story on the front page, Sioux City Public Art, murals flourish downtown. And there is a picture. A local artist, Jessica Hammond, stands in front of a mural she made in October 2020 besides Working Church Booze Parlor in Sioux City. And the story is from Dolly A. Butts of the Sioux City Journal. On a white exterior brick wall at Working Church Booze Parlor, Reverend George Haddock clutches a Bible and Mob boss Al Capone smokes a cigar at a gaming table while Deep Purple's Tommy Bolin plays the guitar. This bold, vibrant mural of notable people from Sioux City's past was designed and painted by local artist Jessica Hammond. It's the latest large-scale artwork to grace downtown Sioux City. I love public artwork. I think it really brings some culture to downtown, said Hammond, who finished the mural in October after working on it for roughly a month. Reagan Cody, executive director of Downtown Partners, said 51 building murals have been painted since 2017 and more are in the works. Cody said funding is being sought for 5 projects. Alley Art Festival. Cody said more walls are being added to the festival, which is usually held the third week in September. The event, a collaboration between Downtown Partners and Vanguard Arts, gives local artists a platform to demonstrate their skills by creating murals in alleyways. Downtown Street Art Project. Downtown Partners plans to work with Bishop Heelan High School art students again to paint pipes, poles, and every other day objects. The students did 7 of those areas. We're going to touch them up and do new ones, Cody said. Storm Drain Project. Cody said Downtown Partners and the City of Sioux City's Environmental Advisory Board are also teaming up on a painting project. It's an educational piece that kind of reminds people what goes into our drains and what happens to the water, she said. Snowplow Blades. Downtown Partners has proposed inviting students in the Sioux City Community School District to paint snowplow blades. Cody said the blades could be displayed in the downtown holiday lighted parade. Leadership Siouxland Mural Project. It's a map of Iowa and it has Sioux City on it and the different monuments and others about Sioux City. They were going to expand and continue that project and do more there, Cody said, of mural located at 3rd Street and Wesley Way. Cody said a grant from the Gilchrist Foundation in 2017 allowed larger murals to be painted downtown. Since then, she said, mural painting has just taken off. We have a lot of different things that happen with paint downtown, she said. Downtown Partners was recently awarded a grant from the 2021 Paint Iowa Beautiful program, which provides free paint to a wide variety of public service projects throughout the state. Cody said 7 gallons of paint received from the program, a partnership between Diamond Vogel and Keep Iowa Beautiful, will be used for some of the proposed projects. This grant through Diamond Vogel is a great impact, she said. There are other grant opportunities that we're going to pursue, especially through the schools. As with each of these projects, some of them are centered around events, so a lot of sponsorships happen for those events, especially like Alley Art Festival. Hammond, who said she has been drawing her whole life, did some acrylic and watercolor painting prior to her first mural. That mural, which she painted with her friend Anna Hart during the 2019 Alley Art Festival, featured a geometric pattern, a skeleton lady with a laser, and some animals in space. It was cool making something larger than life. It was a lot of hard work, Hammond said of the mural. Last summer, Hammond was approached by the Sioux City Growth Organization about designing and painting a mural for Working Church Booze Parlor, 2015 4th Street. Mac Dolan from Working Church wanted something prohibition themed. The Sioux City Gold Board wanted historical aspects. I put the Reverend Haddock, Tommy Bolin, and Al Capone up there because there are 3 notable people from Sioux City's past. I just kind of created the design around that, she said. Hammond immediately went to work on the mural after the 2020 Alley Art Festival. After she finished it in late October, she said she shared photos of her work online and received a great reaction. With spring weather having arrived, Hammond hopes more people are able to see her mural in person. The murals kind of make it a place you can go to take pictures and wander around, she said of downtown. I just think it's really cool. And there is a picture of the mural as well by the local artist Jessica Hammond. And it is located at 215 4th Street in Sioux City. And that's a part of the 51 building murals in the Sioux City area. In our brief, Storm Lake man charged with arson, Storm Lake, Iowa. A Storm Lake, Iowa man has been charged with setting a fire that damaged the garage on Monday. Police were dispatched at 5:50 p.m. to 401 West 4th Street, where it was reported that a person had started a small fire outside an apartment complex. By the time officers arrived, a witness had extinguished the fire, which caused approximately $1,000 in damage to a nearby garage at 504 Ontario Street. Witnesses identified the suspect as Eddie Benjamin, who they said had fled the area before police arrived and had said he planned to start other fires. Officers located Benjamin in the 300 block of West Lakeshore Drive and took him into custody without incident. Benjamin, 28, of Storm Lake, was booked into the Buena Vista County Jail on charges of second-degree arson and reckless use of fire. Today's question on our Speak Out is, what are you planning to do for Easter holiday? You can sound off at www.facebook.com/SiouxCityJournal. Our online poll, today's questions, are you working from home? And yesterday's poll is, what Easter candy is your least favorite? The choices were Peeps, chocolate bunnies, cream eggs, and jelly beans. There were a total of 45 votes, and drum roll, it was Peeps at 52%. And 25% of said cream eggs, and 14% said jelly beans, and chocolate bunnies were 9%. Blackjack jelly beans would probably be my vote of least favorite Easter candy. On our opinion page, we do have a message from the publisher of the journal, Journal Launches Back to Business Initiative, and this is from Chad Pauling, who is the publisher of the Sioux City Journal. He says, as a leading provider of news, information, and advertising solutions in Siouxland, I am excited to announce the launch of our Back to Business Initiative. This program provides the ultimate opportunity for our local businesses to tell their story in their words through branded content, video, digital display, and print. As our local economy reemerges stronger than ever from the changes brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic, we are happy to partner with our local business community to build the future, one success story at a time. This program comes on the heels of our highly successful local marketing grant program and stimulus programs, in which Lee Enterprises, owner of the Sioux City Journal, provided over $15 million in advertising support to local businesses partners across the country. From the large to the small, things have changed, and our local businesses have emerged stronger and more focused than ever. Now is the time to tell their stories, and I would ask that all of you support our local business base by reading their stories and patronizing their businesses in the upcoming months. Since our inception, the Sioux City Journal has partnered with local communities across our region to deliver news and advertising to customers in both of the best of times and the times of change. While COVID-19 has created difficulties for all, those challenges have led to a unique opportunity for our local business community to recover at an unprecedented rate. Recent forecasts predict a market GDP growth of nearly 5%, which is the largest projected growth in recent history. As a leader in news and information for the communities that we serve, we are uniquely positioned to assist our local business community as they progress towards a more normal future. During the COVID-19 pandemic, we have seen record-setting trends in page views and users who are accessing our content in our printed newspaper and at www.siouxcityjournal.com. These audiences present a tremendous opportunity for our local business community to get their messaging out to local residents each and every day. We look forward to helping every local business tell their story as we all emerge stronger together. And again, that is from the publisher, Chad Pauling. Our quote for the day is from Albert Pike, an American lawyer who lived from 1809 to 1891. He says, we have all the light we need. We just need to put it in practice. Again, that is from Albert Pike, American lawyer. Well, we'll go to our sports page and get some of that in before we turn to our obituaries. Coach of the year is Evan Bonnet from the South Sioux. And this is from Shane Lantz of the Journal. For South Sioux wrestling coach Evan Bonnet, success all came down to two things this season: hard work and having fun. Bonnet, who was selected as the Journal Wrestling Coach of the Year, led the Cardinal girls wrestling team to a Nebraska state championship, with six wrestlers finishing as state place winners. With the girls program in just its second year of existence, the Cardinals team wasn't filled with experience. Instead, the team Bonnet led was full of girls that were fairly new to the sport. "We talked to the girls all the time about hard work paying off," Bonnet said. "Most of them, it was their first year wrestling. The few that it wasn't, it was their second year wrestling. And they put in enough hard work this year to really make it pay off. It is really a compliment to them more than anything I did. Rather than see the team's inexperience as a weakness, Bonnet saw it as an opportunity. A team without prior ideas about how to approach the sport was like a blank canvas, one which Bonnet eventually used to sketch the program's first title. Obviously, experience never hurts, but it is nice to be able to teach things that I like," Bonnet said. "The girls really wrestle kind of how we coach. They aren't trying the crazy moves that they saw at this one tournament. They're sticking to the basic moves that are effective and that works in all scenarios. Starting at the ground level is great, and it really has been fun to watch. This past season, girls wrestling was qualified as an emerging sport in Nebraska, and the Nebraska Scholastic Wrestling Coaches Association hosted a girls state tournament for the second straight year. Bonnet was excited to see the growth of the sport at both the state level and for his own program, which grew from 7 wrestlers to 11 this season. Bonnet is convinced that the numbers would have been even higher this season if it hadn't been for COVID-19, and he plans to hit the school's hallways and weight rooms hard in the next year to try to drum up some more interest. A state championship trophy should definitely help the effort, and Bonnet hopes to double the program's numbers in the next couple of seasons. When asked how he was able to take the team from just 2 members in 2019 to a state title winning squad, he passed along credit to his athletes and their recruiting skills. "Just wrestler senior Adriana Zamora not coming back next year, the Cardinals seem to be primed for more success on the mat. Those girls were doing the recruiting," Bonnet said. "Those girls were trying to get their friends into wrestling because they saw the potential with the team and their ability. It made my job on the recruiting trail a lot easier, and I was able to focus on finding the correct tournaments to go to and finding whatever else for the program rather than just trying to find athletes. Another important factor to the program's success is the often overlooked aspect of having fun. Bonnet sees fun as a crucial piece of the championship puzzle. If they are not having fun, then obviously I need to do something different. Winning a state championship was a lot of fun, but a state championship doesn't happen every single day, unfortunately. We need to make sure we still have the fun around the program. Yeah, we want to win, but not at the cost of having fun." Bonnet is the coach of both the boys and girls wrestling programs at South Sioux and gives credit to his assistant coaches, Jeff Wood, Jacob Rinkin, and Jake Becker, for keeping both squads successful. And, of course, credit should go to the wrestlers themselves. "Next year, the plan is to do it again with even more girls participating. We're just making sure that we can continue to grow the sport and don't rest on what we accomplished this past year," Bonnet said. "Let's follow this year up with an even better performance next year." Congratulations to Evan Bonnet and his team for their success in Coach of the Year. Also, a Journal Wrestler of the Year is from Sergeant Bluff Luton, and that's Jack Gockel. And it says, "Leaving a lasting legacy." From Zach James of the Journal, Gockel locks up title and final match of Sergeant Bluff Luton career. Sergeant Bluff, Jack Cockle's dream came true up his final match of the 2021 wrestling season. Growing up, every aspiring wrestler at Sergeant Bluff Luton Community Schools looked up to Colton McChrystal, who eventually won a state championship as a warrior in high school. Gockel wanted the same thing for himself and spent his wrestling career chasing the same type of accolades that he wanted for himself. Gockel, a Sergeant Bluff Luton senior, spent 4 years chasing for the state championships that McChrystal earned in 2012 and 2013. Gockel finally got that state title in February. The Warriors 152-pound senior is the 2021 Journal Wrestler of the Year. After 3 years of being the state runner-up in his weight class, Gockel persevered and won this year's 152-pound division with a 10-2 major decision win over winner sets Tyler Brown on February 20th inside Des Moines' Wells Fargo Arena. "The biggest thought that went through my head during the season was putting a stamp on my career," Gockel said. "I tried to find ways to elevate my game and to build towards college next year. I also wanted to make sure that we were focused on February and finding out how to get it done. I wanted to put an exclamation point on the career that I've had. Garko saw that McChrystal was all about what McChrystal was all about when he was a high schooler earlier during the decade. McChrystal's record was 193-8, and he wrestled in 4 state championship matches. Then McChrystal went to wrestle at Nebraska, where he was a 2-time NCAA championship qualifier. McChrystal was willing to talk to the younger wrestlers, and he showed what it took to be a role model. Garko revered at McChrystal's accomplishments and remembered seeing McChrystal be a role model. Garko just wanted to be like McChrystal. The current Warrior Senior is certainly mindful of serving as a role model for those younger than him. That's something not a lot of people get to do, Garko said. Not a lot of people can say they've wrestled in 4 state title matches or win 2. I think it is something that I definitely chased after. I think me and Colton would agree that we would love to see somebody come along and do better than we did. I believe that we have some of the best kids at Sergeant Bluff Luton, both on and off the mat. The thought of being a role model was on Garko's on a daily basis, especially when wrestling was in season. To be a role model on top of what Garko wanted to accomplish on the mat. Garko knew it was his job to set a great example for the juniors, so sophomores, freshmen, and so on down the enrollment chain. They are the future of where we're going to go, Garko said. I tried to be the best that I could be both on the mat and off the mat to bring more success to them and Coach Coldham's program. Garko's career was a memorable one at Sergeant Bluff Luton. Along with the state title and 3 runner-up bids, Garko won 200 out of 212 matches. He was the top seed in this year's tournament and went wire-to-wire as the number one ranked wrestler in Class 2A at his weight class. Earlier in the fall, Garko announced his commitment to wrestle at Iowa State. With all that said, does Garko consider himself to be one of the greatest in Warriors wrestling history? That's a tough question, Garko said. I try to think of myself when I'm preparing for a match or a tournament as the best guy in the weight class. I would say I ended up being the best version of myself, especially at the tournament. Before the decision match, you would think someone going into a championship match, especially as a senior, had pressure, nerves, and uneasiness. Garko had none of that going into his match with Brown. Garko had beaten Brown in the 2019 tournament during the semifinals, but even more importantly, Garko had a strategy throughout his senior year that was working. Garko stayed within himself and wrestled at his style. Garko took a step back and noticed that maybe he was wrestling a little too conservatively in past title matches. When Garko put points on the board early during the senior season, he was hard to stop. Offense was something I was definitely making a point of, Garko said. I would get a little bit conservative, and that's what hurt me, especially once we got to the state tournament. I think I was the most relaxed I've ever been for a finals match. In previous years, I was really wound up and amped up. I carried that all day. For whatever reason, I was very at peace and calm throughout the day. It was just the mindset of going out there and wrestling, Garko said. I think we just focused on a wrestling match. And congratulations to Mr. Garko for his success at Sergeant Bluff and winning Journal Wrestler of the Year. A couple roundup scores. In baseball, Gross Catholic 14 over South Sioux 6 and Dakota Valley 3 over Elk Point Jefferson 0. So we wanted to get those in. We have a college score, Briarcliff baseball won its first game of the non-conference doubleheader on Tuesday, beating Peru State 6-2 at Bishop Muller's Field. And in late Monday softball, Northwestern 6-5 over Briarcliff, who was 0-2, and Mount Marty, who was 4-5 over. Excuse me, I should say Northwestern. In the first game, 6-0 and then over Briarcliff. And in the second game, 5-2 over Briarcliff. And then Mount Marty, 4-0 and then 5-2 in their games. And these were in look like soft. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, March 31st. on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Maxine Carolyn Horms of Nevada, Iowa. Maxine Carolyn Weigel Horms passed away on this world on Saturday, March 27, 2021, after a four-year battle with cancer. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 6th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Nevada with Father Rick Daggett officiating. Burial will follow at St. Peter's and Paul Catholic Cemetery near Gilbert. A visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, April 5th at Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home in Nevada, and a vigil service will be at 7 p.m. Rasmussen Ryan Funeral Home in Nevada is handling arrangements. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.rasmussenfh.com. And in lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to St. Joseph's Indian School in Chamberlain, South Dakota, or St. Jude's Children's Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee. Sharon R. Hanneman of Sioux City, 76, died Thursday, March 25, 2021, arrangements pending with Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Claudette L. Hummel of South Sioux City. Claudette L. Hummel, 84, of South Sioux City, passed away Thursday, March 25, 2021. Services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday at Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Burial will be in Cushing Cemetery in Cushing, Iowa. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. today, with the family present from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Darlene Clara Ahrens of Remsen, Iowa. Darlene Clara Ahrens, 92, of Remsen, passed away Sunday, March 28, 2021, at her daughter's home in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, surrounded by her family. Memorial Mass will be 10:30 a.m. today at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Remsen, with Father William McCarthy officiating and Deacon Rick Roeder assisting. Mask will be required in church. Burial will follow in the St. Mary's Cemetery in Remsen, keeping to social distancing guidelines. Visitation with family present was held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, with a parish rosary and visual prayer service, all at 5 p.m. at Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Visitation will resume 1 hour prior to the service today at the funeral home. If you are unable to attend, the funeral will be live streamed at www.fishfh.com. Margaret Ann Miller of Sioux City, 66, died Friday, March 26, 2021. Services April 5th at 10 a.m., Cathedral of the Epiphany. Burial is Calvary Cemetery. Visitation April 4th from 5 to 7 p.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Suzanne M. Cranny of Sioux City, 61, died Saturday, March 17, 2021, celebration of life at a later date, arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Sherry Shemelka, and that is spelled C-H-M-L-K-A-M-E-L-K-A. And again, Sherry Shemelka, I hope I get that right, of Sioux City, 85, died Tuesday, March 30th, 2021. Arrangements pending with the Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Kathleen DeVries of Orange City, Iowa. Miss Kathleen DeVries, 94, of Orange City, passed away on Saturday, March 27, 2021, at the Prairie Ridge Care Center in Orange City. There will be a funeral services at 11 a.m. on Friday at the Emmanuel Christian Reformed Church in Orange City. The Reverend Robert Dritton will officiate. Interment will follow the services at the West Lawn Cemetery in Orange City. Visitation with the family will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday at the church. On behalf of the family, we highly encourage the use of masks during the visitation and services. Arrangements are with the Oldman Funeral Home in Orange City. Any memorials may be sent to the George and Kathleen DeVries History Scholarship established at Northwestern College to continue the work of educating the next generations about the past and how it informs our present. The family expressed a special thanks to the wonderful and professional personnel and employees at Landsmere and Prairie Ridge for the expert loving care of our beloved parents over the years. Jackie Johnson of Orillia, Iowa, 89, died Saturday, March 27, 2021. Services are April 2nd at 11 a.m. Bethlehem Lutheran Church, Cherokee, Iowa. Burial is at the Oak Hill Cemetery in Cherokee. Visitation 1 hour prior to service time at the church. Arrangements with the Reddick Funeral Home of Aurelia. You can live stream. There will be a live stream of the service available on YouTube. And I believe if you dial in the Bethlehem Lutheran Church, you'll be able to find those arrangements. Sharon Ray Can of Sioux City, 79, died Friday, March 26, 2021. Services March 31st at 10 a.m. at the St. Joseph's Catholic Church, 1112 8th Street, Sioux City. Burial after the service, Calvary Cemetery. Visitation was held March 30th from 4 to 8 p.m. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel at 3220 Stone Park Boulevard. And one last obituary that was actually a part of a page is from Laverna Bernadette Mullen. And it says, Laverna Mullen breathed her last with her family at her side on Tuesday, March 23rd. She was born August 6, 1925 to Frank and Mary Schmidt Potts in Menomee, Nebraska, the second of six children. Laverna was raised on a farm near Fordyce, waking before dawn to milk cows and feed chickens, and then to do the same again out every afternoon. When she was 17, she moved to Sioux City for a job at Swift Packing Company. Seeking adventure, she took a position with Western Union in Detroit, where she transcribed telegrams and telegraphs for the United States Department of War. At the end of the war, she worked as a secretary for Craig Asphalt Company. On Easter Day in 1950, while visiting the Avalon Ballroom with friends, Rusty Raymond H. Mullen asked her for a dance. They fell in love and were married at the Cathedral of Epiphany Catholic Church on November 10, 1951. Laverna and Rusty raised five children in Sioux City, and in 76, they founded R.H. Mullen Company. She made her home next to the Immaculate Conception Church, where she was a steadfast volunteer. She sewed quilts and clothing for her children, making beautiful gowns for her daughters. When her children were young, she learned to drive a car, started her own company as a professional seamstress while studying to earn her high school GED. Rather than be a golf widow, Laverna took up the sport and excelled, winning trophies in the Morningside Country Club Women's League. After retirement, Laverna and Ray spent their winters in Arizona, where they hiked Superstition Mountain. She and Rusty danced together until he passed away in 2010. She then sold her homes in Sioux City and Mesa and purchased a home in Phoenix. Survivors include her two daughters, Susan of Phillipsburg, Montana, and Janet of Phoenix, and two sons, Dan and Carol of Hinton and Tom Annie of Montana, and brothers Leonard and Marcus of Fordyce. She is also survived by 11 grandchildren, 15 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. She was led to heaven by Rusty and their daughter Nancy and their grandchildren, Alan and Emily. She was met there by her parents and her brothers, Roman and Gerald, and her sister Flava. A mass to celebrate her life will be held at Immaculate Conception in the summer. In lieu of flowers, her children suggest you gather with your family and friends to celebrate love and life. She was fiercely loved and will be dearly missed by those privileged to know her. And that does conclude our obituaries for today, March 31st. If you are celebrating a birthday today, happy birthday. Your horoscope for today says it's up to you to make decisions that suit your needs and to be the one who represents who you are, what you want, and how you're going to reach your goals. Take control to find the path that leads to contentment. Work on stabilizing your financial, physical, and emotional health. And if you are celebrating a birthday, some folks who are celebrating with you and who have celebrated was Rene Descartes, who was a philosopher and mathematician, Joseph Haydn, composer, Mary Abigail Dodge, Jack Johnson, Cesar Chavez, who was a labor leader, Gordie Howe, who was a famous hockey player, Liz Claiborne, fashion designer, and those that are still celebrating with you, Herb Alpert, Christopher Walken, actor, Al Gore, former U.S. president, vice president and senator, and Angus Young, guitar songwriter, Ewan McGregor, actor, and Jessica Zor, actress. And so, again, happy birthday to all. And the comic strip Curtis today says, here's a new rapper named Heavyweight. He's 6'5" and weighs 100 pounds. When I was young, there was a rapper named Q-Ball, and he had a huge afro. I don't get it.
Always fun. One story of interest from the Associated Press, and it is about the donations for Asian American groups surge. Donations and contributions pledges to Asian Americans and Pacific Islander groups have spiked since the March 16 shooting in Atlanta that killed 8 people, including 6 women of Asian descent, and brought renewed attention to violence against Asian Americans. About $25.8 million has been pledged for such groups or causes by nearly 30 philanthropic donors in the aftermath of the shooting, according to a preliminary analysis that the philanthropy research group Candid shared with the Associated Press. By comparison, only $595,000 had been committed this year before the attacks. For all of 2020, the group's latest data shows that about $54 million was directed to Asian American groups or causes. Candid's analysis does not include small donations given to organizations or other contributions that are made directly to the families of victims. Instead, it reflects sizable pledges and donations by philanthropists and other donors to organizations representing Asian Americans. Most of them, the group says, has been corporate commitments falling under $500,000. The largest came from the telecommunications company Verizon at $15 million, of which $5 million is committed to the civil rights group Asian Americans Advancing Justice. The advocacy group National Council of Asian Pacific Americans and the Asian Pacific Islander American Chamber of Commerce and Entrepreneurship, which advocates for the business interests of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. The pledges coincide with numerous calls on social media and other channels to donate to groups representing Asian American communities. Some brands, including PlayStation, Tarte Cosmetics, and Sephora, have said they will provide financial support but haven't specified how much. Others say they'll donate portions of their proceeds from sales. In several major cities, including New York and Los Angeles, police reported an uptick in Asian-targeted hate crimes between 2019 and 2020. According to data collected by the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at California State University, San Bernardino, and Stop AAPI Hate, a California-based group to which several companies have pledged donations, said it's received reports of nearly 3,800 hate incidents, from verbal harassment to physical assault, since March 2020. Many activists have argued that the rhetoric of former President Donald Trump, who repeatedly referred to COVID-19 as the China virus and Kung Flu, contributed to the increase in anti-Asian hate crimes. In the Atlanta case, the shooting suspect, Robert Aaron Long, told investigators that the attacks were not racially motivated, but were instead driven by a sex addiction. A bulk of the commitments to Asian Americans groups are for a GoFundMe page that is raising money for 14 organizations, including the Georgia chapter of the nonprofit National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. Sung Ying Chumaro, executive director of the group's national chapter, told the AP that it has received a surge in donations with an average contribution of $58. A spike in donations often follows a high-profile event like the Atlanta killings that captures national attention. What remains to be seen is whether it will continue. For Red Canary Song, an advocacy group made up of Asian and Asian American sex workers, contributions have already started to drop off, said Yin Q, an organizer with the group. Typically, emergency response donors are not substantial donors, said Shoy Morrow of the Women's Forum. They're generous in the moment and then move on. Our challenge, not only in fundraising but across our programmatic work, is to keep interest in our cause high, she added. This is the first time Asian American and Pacific Islander women are being heard, and we don't want to relinquish that megaphone. Sustainability in donations is particularly important for these groups because they serve an array of diverse communities which advocate stress don't receive much philanthropic funding. Though Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders make up nearly 6% of the U.S. population, a recent report by the advocacy organization Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, and Philanthropy found that just 0.2 tenths of grants from U.S. foundations went towards its communities in 2018, the latest year for which the group has adequate analysis of awarded contributions. Nearly 500 philanthropy leaders have since signed a letter calling for more support. Patricia Ng, CEO of the group, suggested that the communities have been unfunded because of public misconception that all Asian Americans are doing well. But there is a huge wealth gap between Asians at the top and bottom, she added. In New York City, for example, the poverty rate for Asians was close to 22% in 2018, according to the city's poverty measure. Another AP story from Colin Long, and this is out of Washington, studies school plotters of often bullied, depressed. The warning signs are all there. Students who are making plans to attack schools show the same type of troubled histories as those who carried them out. They were badly bullied, often suffered from depression with stress at home, and exhibited behavior that worried others, according to a U.S. Secret Service study released Tuesday that examined 67 thwarted school plots nationwide. Those warning signs are also found in many of the adults who commit mass shootings. The study by the Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center is a twist on the study of school shootings. The group analyzed 100 students responsible for plotting 67 attacks nationwide from 2006 to 2018 in K-12 schools. It's a companion report to its study in 2019 on student attackers. The most comprehensive analysis of school shootings since 1919 Columbine High School killings. The findings demonstrate there are almost always intervention points available before a student resorts to violence, said Lena Althera, the center's head. All of the plots studied were serious planned attacks, and the plotters took at least some steps toward carrying them out, or schools had faced a substantial level of risk. The bystanders who brought the plots to the attention of authorities likely saved lives. The report's finding will be given live to more than 11,000 schools and community organizations during a training session, Althera said. The goal is to take the information and use it so that schools can be better equipped to deal with the warning signs. And that doesn't mean expelling students found to be troubled. The study found expelling students doesn't eliminate the risk, said Stephen Driscoll, one of the authors. Instead, the key is to address bullying, provide mental health support, and assess the impact of stressors in the home. No student should fall through the cracks, he said. The largest number of thwarted plots, 11, came in 2017. Many of the attacks were planned for April when the Columbine shootings occurred. Most of the schools targeted with public high schools, and they were located in 33 states, with 37% in suburban areas and 14% in cities. The plotters were overwhelmingly male. 5 were female. The youngest was 11, the oldest 19. Most were motivated by grievances against them, usually peers and bullying. Many were suicidal or had depression. 8 had a desire for fame or notoriety. More than half had been impacted by adverse childhood experiences like substance abuse at home or parental mental health issues, and many had intended to kill themselves as part of the attack and used drugs and alcohol. In 75% of the attacks, the plotters had access to weapons, mostly from inside their own homes, and more than half had already acquired weapons. Some had homemade explosives. More than half documented their plans through a to-do list or some kind of written justification for their actions. Many of the students showed interest in violence or hate. One expressed concern and interest in the attack at Columbine, where 12 students and a teacher were shot to death by 2 students who then killed themselves. One third conducted research into previous school shootings, like the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School attack in Newton, Connecticut, where 27 people, mostly first graders, were killed. 9 plotters displayed an interest in Adolf Hitler, neo-Nazism, or white supremacy. But most important, the researchers said about 94% talked about their attacks and what they intended to do in some way, whether orally or electronically, and 75% were detected because the plotters talked about them. About 36% were thwarted within 2 days of their intended attacks. And again, that is from the Associated Press. And there is a picture of taken by Ed Andreski, a Columbine High School sign that says, "A Time to Remember, A Time to Hope." And the caption says, a sign at Columbine High School in Littleton, Colorado on April 19, 2004, the site of a mass shooting in 1999. Students who were planning to attack schools showed the same types of troubled history as those who carried them out. They were badly bullied, often suffered from depression with stress at home, and their behavior worried others, according to a new U.S. Secret Service study, is the caption on that. And I have one last story from the Associated Press, and this is from Michael Arsiski and Karen Matthews out of New York. A vicious attack on an Asian American woman near New York City's Times Square is drawing widespread condemnation and raising alarms about the failure of bystanders to intervene amid a rash of anti-Asian violence across the U.S. A lone assailant was seen on surveillance video Monday kicking the 65-year-old woman in the stomach, knocking her to the ground, and stomping her on her face, all as police say he shouted anti-Asian slurs at her. The attack happened outside an apartment building two blocks from Times Square, a bustling, heavily police section of Midtown Manhattan known as the Crossroads of the World. Two workers inside the building who appeared to be security guards were seen on the surveillance video witnessing the attack but failing to come to the woman's aid. Their union said they called for help immediately. The attacker was able to casually walk away while onlookers watched the video showed. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio called the video of the attack absolutely disgusting and outrageous and said it was absolutely unacceptable that witnesses did not intervene. "I don't care who you are. I don't care what you do. You've got to help your fellow New Yorker," de Blasio said Tuesday at his daily news briefing. "If you see someone being attacked, do whatever you can," he said. "Make noise. Call out what's happening. Go and try and help. Immediately call for help. Call 911. This is something that we all have to do our part of the solution, to be a part of the solution. We can't just stand back and watch a heinous act happen." The attack comes amid a national spike in anti-Asian hate crimes and happened just weeks after a mass shooting in Atlanta that left 8 people dead, 6 of them women of Asian descent. The surge in violence has been linked in part to misplaced blame for the coronavirus and former President Donald Trump's use of racially charged terms like China virus, Chinese virus. The New York Police Department said there have been 33 hate crimes with an Asian victim so far this year, news outlets reported. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo called the attack near Times Square horrifying and repugnant, and he ordered the state's police hate crimes task force to offer its assistance to the NYPD. Our last look of weather today, again, a high of 44, a low of 19. Tomorrow, Thursday, plenty of sunshine. Wind is out of the south-southeast, 7 to 14 miles per hour, for a high of 55 and a low of 36. On Friday, much warmer temperatures, 70 for a high and 44 low, sunny, breezy, and warmer. Winds are out of the south, 12 to 25 miles per hour. And on Saturday, mostly sunny and very warm, a high of 75 and a low of 48. And on Sunday, rounding out the week, partly sunny, breezy, and very warm. Winds are out of the south, 12 to 25 miles per hour, and a balmy 81 degrees and a low of 54. Well, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, March 31st. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. As always, thanks for listening and have a great day. Thank you.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing. It really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.